Okay, so Steve, you know how nowadays when you're writing an email, Gmail or whatever it is will often kind of suggest to you how you finish a sentence?
Yeah, like for example, I'll be typing great to and it'll fill in hear from you now. It freaks me out a little bit because it knows exactly what I want to say. I think I need to be more creative or something.
Well, maybe, right? But this is the next wave sort of autocorrect. It's autofill, this kind of predictive technology that's not only fixing our spelling errors anymore, but it's also now kind of predicting the things we say and how we say it.
Okay, so here is the world question we need to ask, the big global question.
Yes.
What does all this mean?
Right. Okay. And it is fundamentally changing the way we communicate with one another? So I had the same question and I continually allow my Gmail to finish my thoughts for me. So I sat down to talk more about it with Ed Finn. He is the founding director of the Center for Science and the Imagination at Arizona State University.
I think it's certainly making it easier to think less, to be more thoughtless about what you're saying. It's giving you an easy option. Mm-hmm. And when you think about it, a lot of our emailing and communication is filled with these rote phrases that we're just repeating back and forth that are totally meaningless.
Yeah.
And you say, how are you doing? Do you actually care how they're doing? You know, sometimes you're not really that serious about the question. So in the defense of these technologies, they are just elaborating a set of rituals, really, that we've used before. But what you see now is that they're getting more sophisticated. They're leaping in maybe at a time when you might not have expected in an email or somewhere else. So they're taking us a little farther down this path of offering up the next line of the conversation in a way that feels like a bigger extrapolation than just correcting something or, you know, doing something really obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's certainly pushing us to be more normative. It's sort of, instead of saying something in a slightly weird way, and sometimes misspellings can be really beautiful and interesting too, right? They can be funny. Sometimes they can be troubling. But, you know, they're very human. Error is human. And when you have this more automated, middle-of-the-road, anodyne, standardized language, you know, it's taking some of the interestingness out of conversation.
So, okay, then the big question, what does this mean, right? Is it fundamentally sort of changing the way that we communicate?
I think that it is, and I think it goes back to spell check and a much older history of standardizing language.
Mm-hmm.
And English is an incredibly weird language. You know, we steal all these words from other languages. We steal anyone who's learning English as a second language, I pity, because it's so full of idiosyncrasies and weird rules and exceptions. There are many other languages that are more regularized and the rule actually is the rule. So English has been weird, and that was expressed in our text and our conversation for a long time by spelling also being weird and communication being more weird and idiosyncratic. And people would just invent new words, or they would spell words with no concern about spelling in the same way, even within the same document by the same author, right?
Yeah.
And there's something, you know, a little sad about missing that freewheeling style now, that especially with spell check, everything, we've all standardized on things. You know, we spell judgment without an E in the middle. But I think the bigger question is, when we think about not correcting errors, but anticipating what we might say next.
Yeah.
And I think this is especially interesting in the instance when we're asking questions, like a search engine with an autocomplete for your query. Because then it's not even that there's a conversation you're having. It's this whole new, Google calls it the quest for knowledge or the search for knowledge, that they're helping their users on the search for knowledge. But what does it mean when the machine is actually giving you the question and the answer? You know, who's on the quest now?
So, I mean, there's a linguistic side of this, right? In the sense that, like you say, we're sort of simplifying the language. Did the language used to change a lot more? And will it kind of stop changing because of this kind of phenomena?
I think language is going to continue to evolve, and we certainly still make up new words, and we have all of these, we have emojis, we have all of those little acronyms that people use, like LOL.
Right.
So we'll continue to make language weird. I have no lack of faith in the humanity to continue to say weird things and do weird things. But I think that we're in a really interesting phase where we're becoming much more dependent and much more sort of cyborg-like in how we communicate. Like now we're communicating so much of the time with a machine. And even if we're talking to other humans, you know, there's this machine or multiple machines in between. And I think that that means that a lot of the nuance and the ways in which we communicate get filtered through those different communications media. So just like you get a text message, and without the other context of what the tone of voice, body language, you know, the same text message could be read in many different ways. I recently learned that apparently there's a convention among younger people that if you end your text message with a period at the end, that adds this emphasis and seriousness that is read to be more than just a period at the end of a sentence.
Right.
And so apparently, yeah, I put periods at the end of my text messages without, just because it's the end of the sentence. You know, it's not supposed to convey some emotional impact, but some people read it that way. And so these are changes wrought by the fact that so much of our discourse is now computationally, you know, mediated. We're talking to one another through the machines. But I think there's something really interesting in the way, especially with autocomplete, that these phrases also, they can bring us together because there's an interesting sort of community around words and phrases. So all of these things that are getting suggested to us are suggested because thousands of strangers also type them in at some point. They're in some corpus of human language that this machine was trained on. Mm-hmm. And that can be beautiful sometimes. So in another class, I sometimes have my students do creative writing using Google's autocomplete from the search bar. So I'll give them a little seed prompt like, how do I or why should I? And then they can add letters and words, but then they can only harvest what Google gives them back as autocomplete options to create an original poem or story or something. And I always love seeing what they come up with because it's so powerful and weird. And what makes it powerful is the idea that lots and lots of other people had this question.
Right.
They typed this thing in, and you can imagine this strange community of people on this quest for knowledge all wanting to know about sometimes really profound and personal things. The search bar becomes a kind of confessional.
Is there a flip side to that, though, where we're sort of, if this predictive technology is sort of repeating ourselves back to ourselves, are we just perpetuating the echo chamber?
So I think that's absolutely true, and I think that the ease of communicating through our little computer friends and the way that they funnel us towards a smaller set of more well-used and familiar phrases, it does, I think, kind of funnel us towards a more limited kind of discourse. So it's like higher volume but lower meaning or something.
Yeah.
So while overall I think communicating more is a good thing, I wish that we could find ways to do more meaningful communicating when we are taking the time to engage with another human being.
Do you think that that's going to be, or maybe already is, a reaction to this? Like people pushing themselves toward that because it does start to feel rote or uncreative or impersonal?
I think that people must do that. I mean, I read text that I get in email. And I think that now there's permanently this small part of my brain that says, did a human actually write this or not? And it's just always running in the background. And it sort of pops up when it says, man, this seems really robotic, or this is clearly copied and pasted from somewhere else. And that really impacts how seriously I take the message and how much energy I invest in my response. Mm. But it's really hard. It's hard to figure out how you create authenticity, how you create real and deeper meaning, but people will find a way. A lot of our most important relationships begin with text, actually, which could be with someone that you love, you know, a parent or a spouse or a child, but also with the books that you really care about, authors. You know, text is this way that we escape the boundary of the individual mind. We're all trapped on our own little islands of consciousness, and literature and text are the only forms of telepathy that we have. You know, yeah. It's the only way you can actually imagine and get into somebody else's head, try to share what's going on in yours. So we have to keep embracing that and saying things that are uniquely and weirdly us.
So we're not quite all machines yet.
No, I think we have to embrace our robot overlords and, you know, accept that communication is, you know, we're never going to step back to some sort of magical Halcyon era when we weren't using all these technologies. We're going to keep using them. So how do we use them to be better people?
Yeah.
And share our thoughts in a more interesting way?
Yeah. All right. Ed Finn is the founding director of the Center for Science and the Imagination at Arizona State University. Ed, thank you so much for coming in to talk to me about this.
Thanks for having me.